I am just trolling. From Yahoo Sports, this is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Hey, get out of here, huh?
That's what you're talking
about. Sean is right.
The FC Yahoo Podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the FC Yahoo Podcast. I am your host, Shahan Ahmed, and joined, per usual, by Alex Baker.
Tonight, I'm a rock and roll podcaster.
And also Joey Galino.
I missed that show the other night. I feel bad. I had a chance to go, but it was too last minute.
Top show, mate. Top show.
We are referring to Liam Gallagher at the Wiltern. Is that correct?
At the Wiltern.
Oh, that's right.
Lots of Man City jerseys in the audience.
Right down the street from where I live now.
That's right.
I moved into that neighborhood.
Shahan Stalkers. That's where you can find him.
That does not exist. Thankfully. Thankfully. So we are going to start this week talking about actually the international week that just was. So some of those World Cup qualifying. We're going to talk about some of the playoffs. Peru getting in, which is kind of cool. They edged out New Zealand. Also, we're going to talk about Italy not making it. And personally, you know, I'm going to go into why it is nothing like the United States not making it. And I'm sure we'll get stuck on that for a little bit. But hang around, because after we get done with the international stuff, we will come back and talk about some of the cool derbies coming up. The North London derbies this weekend, the Madrid derbies this weekend, and also some just kind of fun, funky Premier League fixtures. We got Man City versus Leicester City in the two cities. We got the two Uniteds, Newcastle and Manchester United. And then we have the feeder club versus the parent club, I guess we'll call it. Liverpool-Southampton is what I'm referring to here. Also, the fun match that is always West Brom versus Chelsea. Can't wait for that one.
Oh, man.
Wow.
But we are going to begin with the international stuff. And you know what, Joey? I know you want to talk about the United States, so let's just get out in front of this and talk about the B.
I'm pumping my fist as we speak.
The B team, C team, D team by a coach that won't be around come February playing against Portugal without Cristiano Ronaldo. Clearly, if you watch this match, your name is Joseph Galino. Joey?
You know, it obviously doesn't mean a ton in the grand scheme of things, but it was the first match that the team has played since that night in Port of Spain in Trinidad. And there was some stuff to be culled from the roster, the call-ups, the lineup. You know, obviously moving forward, Danny Williams is not going to be a one-man level of defensive mid. Eric Lehigh is probably not going to start at left back very much ever again. You know, but the youngsters got a chance to go out there. Weston McKennie had a really good game. He might have been the best player in the entire match. And, you know, Ethan Horvath had a howler that led to Portugal's goal. I think it was a cross that was swung in, and he just tried to dive on it, and it went right, you know, underneath him and into the net. But he did acquit himself pretty well outside of that. Granted, that's a pretty big mistake to have. They played Tyler Adams in a weird area, you know, out wide. It was not necessarily where he usually plays with New York Red Bulls, but, you know, he still looked like he was pretty good. And, I mean, overall, this doesn't mean that the United States is as good as the reigning European champions, but I just, you know, there's a couple things from that game where I thought it was kind of interesting. And, you know, I guess it's better to draw that game than lose like 7-0 with all the young guys.
So while that game was going on, I actually saw some people tweeting about it, which infuriated me because at the same time, Germany was playing.
Was it Leander?
No, it was another colleague of ours. But anyway, it was actually at the same time was France versus Germany, which was actually a really, really fun game. I don't know if you guys caught any of that.
Now,
no. That was a friendly worth watching, actually. Lacazette had a couple goals in that one. Mesut Ozil looked really good.
Oh, so wait. Yeah, hold on. Alexander good. Lacazette played in an important match, or a relatively important match. Interesting.
And Mesut Ozil good in a football game.
He also scored twice.
Unusual. So.
And Ozil looked like he does for Germany, which is a world-class player, not a guy who goes MIA every other week. But, it was kind of an interesting international week because we had a lot of teams that had made it in, and then we had a lot of those European qualifiers. Now, the main qualifier that everybody's talking about is Sweden versus Italy. And Sweden got a 1-0 in the first leg. And then in the second leg, let's just say it was awful, awful refereeing for both teams. There could have been like 4 penalties handed out. It was not a clean game from that standpoint. That said, Italy had plenty of chances. They could not put one goal in. And, I still am not sure why the substitutions that took place took place. How do you not put Insigne on, who was in form and looked like the best person to get in there and create something?
That made no sense.
Instead, they go with El Shaarawy and Belotti, who I understand those two. But then the third, they still had the third sub to put Insigne in, and they didn't. They just chose not to go with him. It made no sense to me. And yeah, Ventura has resigned already slash got sacked, however you want to look at it, but he's no longer coaching the team. But you know what? The comparison has been made between, well, maybe it's not so bad that the U.S. didn't make it. I mean, look, Italy didn't make it. Well, let's look at what actually happened, okay? Italy was in the same group as Spain. Only one team automatically qualifies. They played 10 matches in that group. Italy lost 2 of those 10, won 7, drew 1. The United States had 10 matches in the hex. They won 3 of them. 3. It's not the same thing at all. And then, what do? They end up in this playoff against Sweden. Now, Sweden, everybody's saying, well, what about, well, they were in the group with France. France won that group. Who was third in that group?
The Netherlands.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, Sweden isn't just some run-of-the-mill team. They actually worked hard to qualify to this playoff as well. Very well disciplined. They don't necessarily have the stars, but they actually know their roles, well coached clearly to hold off Italy for 180 minutes because Italy is not in the same place as the United States. And I think the most telling thing about this is that the second the match was over, the coach said, yeah, I screwed up, I'm out. And the United States, it was, you know, people twiddling their thumbs, trying to figure out what's going to happen. The expectations were so different. And on top of that, you know, they didn't lose to Trinidad and Tobago, who was the last team in the hex. They lost to a team that's going to the World Cup, that belongs in the World Cup, that earned its right to the World Cup. So it's not the same type of debacle, although, yes, I know the Italian press will go crazy because it's been nearly 60 years since Italy hasn't been in the World Cup.
But I'll tell you what the common factor is, and I think that it was arrogance and entitlement. And I think that the United States were very arrogant in the qualifying process, very much took it for granted that they were going to find a way to get there. And I think the same could be said of Italy, who just assumed because they were Italy, they'd somehow find this way to get past a Sweden team that had other ideas and shut them down. And, you know, I watched the last half hour of that second leg. Italy just put up nothing. They put up really nothing at all. And so Sweden just basically played the clock out. You know, we know this is not a vintage Italy side, but you would expect more. And as you say, the substitutions were just...
Well, the coaching was just awful.
It's been awful for a couple of years. That's yeah. been a big problem.
I mean, there were calls to actually fire Ventura between the first leg and the second leg. And in hindsight, they probably should have. Because honestly, Italy was good enough to be playing at home at the San Siro with the talent that they had available to them. I mean, you should be starting some of those guys. Forget bringing them off the bench. But to not have Insigne, who was in form and honestly was – the commentators watching the match were saying he's chopping at the bit trying to get on there as he's doing his warm-ups. You know, we had that video of Daniel De Rossi being told to warm up, and he points at Insigne and says, we don't need a tie. We didn't need a draw. We need a goal right now.
You're a playmaker. Yeah, somebody makes it.
And he genuinely is like, no, put that guy in. He needs to be out there. But yeah. It was that type of stuff that you're just looking at and going –
Why on earth would you put on a holding midfielder at a time like that?
And exactly. So I think it was very, very poor management more than it is that their team. Like, you look at the talent on Italy, it's the right age. They actually have good youth coming through. It's not the United, like United States right now, you look at it, outside of Pulisic, you genuinely are like, this team should have nobody left on it. Sure. Just scrap everybody and no one's going to really complain.
Joey, I know you're looking right now at the lineups, so I'm not going to ask you this question. Shahan, name me 3 players on that Sweden team, can you?
I know their names end with Sen.
That's what I mean. I couldn't name 3. Joey can because he's actually...
Well, I know there's a Larson.
Seb Larson's still on the side. Victor Lindelof. Yeah. Emil Forsberg has been fantastic for RB Leipzig.
I'm sure there's a nil something or other there.
This is not... You know, you say it's not a vintage Italy side, which it's not. But it's also not really a vintage Sweden side. I mean, they've had some superstars before, and this is kind of... But, you know, this team grinds. They work hard. And, you know, 4 years ago, I think they had the playoff leg against Ronaldo, right? It was basically Zlatan versus Ronaldo for the right to go to the World Cup.
That's right.
And so that was kind of unlucky. You know, that's a bad draw. You don't want to play a player like that. But this time, I think, you know, I think a lot of these guys were in that side too. And they said, you know, they knew what they were getting into, and they knew what it took to kind of grind out these results. And so I actually kind of want to give Sweden credit here as well.
We've
got to dump dirt on Italy, obviously. But yeah, well, I give them credit.
That was my point, was that Sweden earned their right to be there, and Italy kind of got a tough draw.
Mm-hmm.
To be in a group with Spain and then to face Sweden, because honestly, when you look at those playoffs that went on in Europe, you could have got. I think Italy makes it by Republic of Ireland, or they make it by a lot of the teams when you look at who matched up. Sweden was the one team you didn't want,
right.
And they got Sweden. And Sweden deserves to be in the World Cup, so I'm taking nothing away from them. But
they certainly do. They certainly do. And Joey had a great tweet this week about how there's sort of a group of death of teams that didn't make it. But I think, you know, seeing Italy, the Netherlands, the USA, the Ivory Coast, Chile all on the outside, I think the lesson learned is that nobody belongs in the World Cup. You have to earn it. Unless you're the host, you don't get to be there. You know, you got to fight for it.
Did you see my response to Joey's tweet?
I missed it.
It was, and I would still pick the United States to finish last in this group of death.
I mean, against Chile and the Netherlands and Italy, I don't think you'd be alone in that. I think that, if there's like one lesson to be learned from this qualifying cycle, I still don't think it's that hard to qualify for the World Cup. So I think that it's only hard to qualify in South America. I think Europe is very forgiving in a lot of respects. CONCACAF is incredibly forgiving in every respect. So it comes down to the word you mentioned, Alex, arrogance. The arrogance of these sides to think that even if the statistical numbers, I think it was 93% chance the U.S. would reach Russia going into the Trinidad and Tobago game on the last day of qualifying, and Italy just kind of were they thought that, you know, Ventura thought he could do whatever he wanted with the lineup because they have all this talent and stuff. You know, there's these sides, with the exception of Chile, which I think sort of started to show that it was pretty burnt out after playing deep into the summer in the Copa Americas and then the Confederations Cup, like
two Copas in a row.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lay that at the feet of them just assuming that they wouldn't get there. But I think everybody else, there was kind of a hint of that, you know, it's our right to be in the World Cup and the other teams will lay down for us, and it doesn't work like that. And I mean, the only disappointing thing is that we're going to have 48 teams soon enough in the World Cup, so you really have to stink to miss out once that happens.
I mean, that 93% number, I will just say, is brought to you by the same people who said that our president would be female with like a 98% probability.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So I don't pay much credence to those numbers. There's, hot soccer takes. Speaking of hot soccer takes, somebody just walked by with a sign outside of our podcast recording.
Because aren't any going on.
talking about Sweden a little bit, Zlatan Ibrahimovic is almost back from Manchester United. So, Alex, I want to talk to you about this. Do you think that Zlatan, if he remains healthy coming back from his injury, and that's a big if, because we're talking about a major injury, an injury that you've experienced yourself.
Sure.
Staying healthy for the next 6-7 months, playing first, you know, top level football, having an active role in the squad. Do you think, from both sides, do you think that Zlatan should be with Sweden, and do you think Sweden should want Zlatan?
I think Zlatan should be with Sweden because I think that some big teams have missed out on this World Cup. Some teams are in the World Cup that people aren't really that excited to see. Some teams got into the World Cup, Sweden included, by not playing really, really very spectacular, entertaining football. So I think we want to get as many of the big stars, the guys that we tune in to watch there as we possibly can. So I think it's a tough injury to come back from. But the fact that Zlatan is possibly going to be on the bench this weekend and will most likely take the field in 2017 is pretty remarkable. And I don't want to lionize the Zlatan myth too much, but the guy's pretty exceptional. His comeback has apparently been a lot quicker than you would expect for an injury like this, which is a tough injury to come back from. I you know, as an amateur park pickup futsal league guy.
But as a professional human being.
Yes.
Sure, sure. I didn't play for 15 months. And then when I did come back, it took, you know, maybe another year to get back to some semblance of being able to play. But I did change my game, and I kind of went from less of being like sort of an out-and-out goal scorer to a bit more of like, okay, I've got to be a bit smarter and play the ball smart and not just run everywhere.
That's what it says in his scouting report on the internet, too.
Yeah.
He went from scoring 5 goals a game to scoring 3 goals a game.
Scoring 5 goals a month. But, you know, there's talk of Zlatan moving into more of a number 10 role for United. So I think that...
That's the jersey he wears. I mean, duh.
Yeah, well, but maybe playing more of that kind of position. So I don't see why Sweden wouldn't want to have Zlatan in their squad. Would he want to go? Would he want to unretire? Would he want to go take part in it, even if he didn't play a part in getting them there?
Yeah.
I don't really know, but I think that the World Cup, because as we remember from the last World Cup, it was not worth watching without Zlatan. So I'd say let's make this a World Cup worth watching.
I think that exceptional is the key word here, and I think it's not just in terms of his ability. I think that in most cases, you know, you'd kind of say, like, if this was a different national team, maybe a different player, you know, you'd be like, well, you retired already. You haven't been there for us now. You know, why would we want you back? The truth is they're going to need some goal scoring, and he's given so much of himself to this country and kind of carried the banner for Sweden. You know, we talked earlier, like the Freddie Lundbergs of the world, they had some stars, and, you know, then it kind of transitioned into Zlatan, and he's sort of been the big guy for them, and he's carried that mantle
well.
He's
been the captain.
And he's carried that mantle well, and it's like, I don't think anybody on the team would resent him coming back in the side. And you'd also say, you know, even if he doesn't change his role for the team, it's not like adding him is going to completely mess up what, you know, they're still going to play hard. They're still going to work for each other. They're still going to do what they've done to get to this point. So you're not talking about upsetting chemistry necessarily. Like, they're still going to play the way they're going to play. I don't think he's going to be, you know, they're not just going to all of a sudden start playing boom ball to Zlatan and seeing if he can score. That's just not how the team is constructed. So I think it's exceptional in those cases that it's a player that will not engender resentment among the locker room, the dressing room. And it's also a player that if you reintroduce him, I'm not sure it would really alter things like structurally and strategy-wise. So I think they should do it.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't retire 10 years ago. He was playing with the team, you know, what, 16 months ago he was on the team. I'm going to break out one of the oldest, most overused football cliches ever. But
I'm here for this.
You know, that is a kind of – brace yourselves. That's the kind of guy you want in the dressing room for a tournament like this.
Yes.
You want a guy like that to pick up the team and to get guys going, even if he's not making the impact on the field that he maybe, you know, did, you know, Euro 2012 or something. But still, I think you want Zlatan. If you're in Sweden, you want Zlatan. If you're a soccer fan, you want Zlatan there.
And he also, from another perspective, like, Sweden has excelled playing this style and kind of not being like controversial or anything, kind of going flying under the radar. That was as true as recently as this qualifying playoff against Italy, because the story was Italy. Everyone was focusing on them. He brings Zlatan back. Well, there's the guy who's going to get all the attention, you know, but he's going to handle it responsibly. And so they can just keep flying under the radar, the rest of the team, and doing what they do. So I think it makes sense.
I mean, he's already put a picture of the team with the trophy and labeled it Sweden.
Sweden.
With a Z or
Dare
a Z.
Dare to Sweden.
Yeah, so I think that he is saying he may want to take part in this. But if he doesn't, apparently there may be a BS tournament, that's what I'm calling it, next summer involving teams that are not in the World Cup. Before I even throw it over to you guys, let me just say that if I was a professional that was from Chile, the United States, anywhere else in the world, and I wasn't in the World Cup, and my home nation asked me to play in some BS made-up tournament for their profit, I would tell them to...
Bleep. Miss me with those takes, guys, all right?
So... without getting too far into this, because I don't think we need to spend too much time on this, would you guys want a tournament involving teams like Chile, Netherlands, the United States? I mean, these are obviously good footballing nations historically, but would you guys want them to be playing at the same time as the World Cup?
Can I go first?
Yes.
No.
Thank you for that take.
That's, yeah, like, I maybe in another summer where there was less going on, but I'm sorry, I'm not going to watch the United States play a glorified friendly. Rabid as a fan as I am, I'm not going to watch them play a glorified friendly against Chile or Argentina or somebody. When
well, Argentina's at the World Cup.
World
not
Cup
playing.
Going on.
Yeah.
The reason these teams didn't make it, none of them are very good right now.
You know
They're
who
not
could,
a good team.
You know
it
who
be
could
be a bad tournament.
You know who could be in this tournament is the team that played in the Gold Cup from Mexico. They could probably all be there because they did not. Hey, at least Bruce Arena won that tournament. Moving on rapidly.
Please, we have to get away from this as fast as possible.
Yeah. Oh, man, Henry's going to be upset.
The International Champions Cup of International Football.
It's just so sad. It's like, well, we're going to start our own tournament because, you know, you guys didn't want us to come to that. No, you didn't qualify for that one. You earned that
the
result.
ICC of Nations.
Yeah, Henry was calling it the NIT. It was like...
It's basically the NIT of tournaments.
Which also no one really watches.
In tournament.
Unless you're a degenerate gambler, you are not watching the NIT. No. And I said it, NCAA. I said it. All right. In any case, before our soccer fans are like, what are these people talking about?
Don't turn off the podcast, guys. We promise.
All right. How about we take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk some European football coming up.
This podcast is brought to you by Energy Drinks. Energy Drinks. They're awful for you, but energy drinks.
It's my beer!
All right. We are back, and now we're going to talk about the European games coming up this weekend. There's, you know, all the leagues are back in action, and there are a couple of games that really stand out. One is the North London Derby, and one is the Madrid Derby. Yes, we are suckers for derbies, even though they're spelled derbies, but, you know, we'll move along from that point. It's pronounced derby, all right? Get it right. So let's start with the Madrid Derby. No. Let's go with the North London Derby, because I feel like we're going to spend more time on that one.
NLD.
Get it out of the way.
So we mentioned Alexander Lacazette having a nice little outing with France earlier this week in international friendlies.
That's what happens when you start him in games.
Wait, do you mean the high-priced striker you've been trying to get for years, who you finally got, and then you start him in a big game?
Who could have seen that
coming,
though?
Insane.
What a crazy idea.
Insane. That's well,
progressive coaching.
What exactly... I mean, what is Arsenal playing for at this point, I guess, is the better question.
The fourth-place trophy, baby.
And you know what? They are in touching distance of fourth place. They're not out of it by any means. So just straight off the bat, what are you guys expecting from this weekend? What would you like to see from this weekend for both teams or for either team? Alex, let's start with you.
For Tottenham, injuries. Lots of injuries.
Whoa! Can't condone that.
Alex is a supporter of Arsenal. We should put a disclaimer in there.
Maybe not injuries, just suspensions. I would like to – well – I'm looking forward to a good game of football, for certain. You know, if you want to go by the form book, you could say certainly Tottenham is the more informed team right now. Pochettino has got a great record against Arsene Wenger. I don't think he's lost a game to Wenger. So, you know, you could say, despite Arsenal being at home, that I still think they are favorites because they're at home. But are they favorites? I don't even know.
I shot him a look just now, everybody.
Yeah,
I was like,
a sideways look from Joe. He kind of burst my bubble.
Arsenal being favorites against anybody in the top six is debatable.
I think
it's true.
Because it is at home, it's not like Arsenal, you know, this is, we've lamented this for years. It's not like they play all that different on the road. You know, they set up to attack, which
frequently, that's the problem.
Yeah, leads them to getting ripped to shreds by teams. But so, you know.
Remember that one game against Man City when they didn't do that?
Yeah, that was weird. That was, what, 2015 already, I think.
And it worked. They won 2-1. And then they were like, we'll never do this again.
Now we're good with losing 6-0 and stuff like that. I think that Tottenham has to be the favorite based on form alone to get at least a result. And I think that them and United are both level on, what, 23 points, I think. Mm-hmm. And City is setting such a furious pace atop the table, that if you're Tottenham or you're Man United, who I think, you know, I think we all expect City to win the league, but I think you'd have to say those are the two other teams now, given what we've seen.
Wait, who'd you guys pick to win the league before the
season? I picked Chelsea.
And what about you, Alex?
I'm wearing that badge.
Manchester United.
Weird. Yes, we all did expect Man City to win preseason.
Oh, no, I'm saying, like, if you take it on form now, you're like, oh, City's going to win.
I picked Man City, just so we're clear.
But if Tottenham wants to even have a chance, you know, they probably can't drop points here. And they're, you know, as long as Harry Kane plays, they're obviously a different team. They're incredible when he plays. And if you look at some of the fixtures they've had already, they've gone into the Bernabeu and gotten a result. Going to the Emirates is sort of like, why should I be scared of this? Like, you don't trust Wenger to make tactically sound decisions. There's going to be something that will leave you scratching your head when you see the team sheet before in the lineup before the match. And so I think just you got to trust Tottenham more. And since you have to trust Tottenham more, I don't see why they wouldn't be favorites in this game. I think they should expect to have, you know, a good game, and they should go in there confident and expecting to get all 3 points.
Is there any part of you guys that wants to see Arsenal fail just so Arsene doesn't last these 2 years? Or at this point, have you just like, whatever, it's going to happen? So
a little bit of both, because I think that it's like he fails and fails and fails and fails again. And he's still there.
He's a specialist in failure.
I mean, he's not going anywhere. Like, I don't know. I'll tell you what. The Rams, we were talking about, and not to segue too far from soccer, but we were talking about the Los Angeles Rams earlier. They're owned by the same guy.
An NFL team.
That owns the Arsenal. And his teams Stan are infamous Kroenke. For, you know, just making money and not really being that good. The Rams are finally good, thanks to some sound decision-making. Arsenal probably not going to get back to that level until Arsenal.
They fired their coach, in case anyone's wondering.
Yeah.
That was the sound decision making. They got rid of their coach.
Hired a good one, too. So,
well, yeah, I'd like to disagree with Joey, but I have no. That's just on principle. But I can't. There's nothing Arsenal have done this season that says they should be able to beat Tottenham.
Basically, both of you guys think that Tottenham's going to win this. And if Tottenham wins, they would potentially, depending on what happens with Man U versus Newcastle, they could just move into second place. Because right now, both those teams are level on 23 points. All the same, Arsenal, technically in sixth right now, is tied on points with Liverpool. So,
and Burnley.
And Southampton has a habit of basically just destroying Liverpool every year for some unknown reason. It's just like, it's like revenge. You took all of our players, we will beat you. So in any case, there could be a huge shakeup in the top six, not counting Man City, because frankly, we all just at this point expect Man City to never lose a game.
Their goal differential is 31 through 11 matches. That's ridiculous.
And it's pretty stunning, frankly. It should be noted that Man U has also been kind of on a downturn. So let's see. But the one thing I'll say that should be interesting coming into this match is that we're coming off an international break. And whenever that happens, you get some weird freak results. So like that could work in Arsenal's favor, just because I think on the strength of the season and the way if there was no break, you would take Tottenham to win 90 out of 100 times.
Good point.
But coming off an international break, we've seen some freakish things happen. You know, so I think it'll be an interesting game. And if nothing else, it'll be entertaining because Arsenal doesn't really know how to play any other way other than attacking, even though they probably should learn how to.
I think the international break works definitely more in Arsenal's favor than Tottenham's favor.
Well, yeah, Ozil looked good and Lacazette looked good too. So,
well, there's that. But also I think that it broke some positive momentum for Tottenham, and I think it broke some negative momentum for Arsenal. So
it negative, could. Yeah. What's been negative about this season?
For Arsenal?
I'll tell you what. One point we haven't talked about, the referee for this game is Mr. Mike Dean, if I'm not mistaken. Mr. may or may not have fist pumped during a Tottenham goal, after a Tottenham goal in a North London derby beforehand. So I'm sure Arsenal fans will be very cheerful and respectful toward him.
Mike Dean, who just notably misses penalties from time to time.
Yes.
No insults being thrown here. No personal jab. I'm just saying it's been known to happen from time to time. Joey, by the way, is the person coughing in the background. He's dying, but he's staying with us for this podcast.
Playing hurt.
But we will move on. So those are some of the fixtures coming up in the Premier League, and mainly that one fixture is what everybody's got their eyes on. The one that everybody else has their eye on pretty much across Europe, and frankly you should be watching this regardless, is Real Madrid versus Atletico Madrid, which is always a fantastic fixture. It hasn't quite been the season domestically for either club. Well, Barcelona's pretty much just been dominating all in all. So at this point, we are hoping to see, I don't know, who would you like to see win this match? Or do you want to see a draw and then Barcelona has an even bigger lead? Like, what would you like to see happen in this match? What are you guys expecting, I guess?
I want to see a winner. I mean, I don't know if I'm rooting for either team in particular, but it's sort of the same situation that Tottenham finds itself in with Man City setting the pace. You know, these two teams aren't even second. They're third and fourth, but level on 23 points. So if they want to stay within touching distance of Barcelona, and they're going to have to win this match and get all 3 points. And I believe Atleti's already played their home fixture versus Barca, right? And Real Madrid's still got 2 El Clasicos. So I guess I'd lean toward Real Madrid just because you'd like to see that title race. They've got two chances directly to deny Barcelona 6 points. And if they get three from this match and maybe Barcelona drops more somewhere else, then that's, you know, the difference that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's an 8-point difference right now. Barcelona is clear at the top, 31 points. Valencia second on 27 points. Valencia, by the way, keep an eye on that.
Yes.
There's this Guedes kid who's really good, Portuguese kid. But just they've been scoring goals like madmen. It's great to see Valencia back because they were in, if you remember, the even when Rafa came in there, but they were in the relegation zone and all types of a mess for quite some time over the last few years. But this year they've really, really got it together. And
yeah, what about Zaza? Like that guy's like a different player.
Well, Simone Zaza has been playing much better as well. But just all around the vibe at Valencia. If you watch a Valencia match, you're guaranteed to watch goals. It's a fun fixture to watch anytime. And if you actually look at their record, they have no losses. Valencia has 8 wins, 3 draws. So it really is right now Real Madrid and Atletico trying to catch up to Valencia, and Barcelona is just ahead of the pack. But it's this match, in my opinion, is which team has no chance. If you lose this, if either team loses, you're pretty much out of the running. If they draw, you're still hurting yourself. Yeah. It's so one of these teams has to win, and whichever one wins, I think, has a chance to get back in the title race.
It's difficult to call, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is.
I think that I want to see a winner, definitely. I'm leaning towards Atletico because I think – I mean, I realize they haven't lost – they haven't actually won a game since September, but they haven't lost in their new stadium yet. And I think that the international break was probably more taxing on Real Madrid players.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of thinking that gives Atletico a little bit of an edge, especially the style they play against Real Madrid, which is to sort of frustrate them and kind of nullify them.
You know what's been really weird? I mean, Real Madrid's made a lot of mistakes. You know, the players are getting carded and suspended, and they kind of just can't seem to get out of their own way to start the season. But one thing that's like – it sounds really simple, but it's been really important. Like, they're not scoring at the clip that they usually do. Their finishing touch has not been there, which is weird. Like, you expect
Ronaldo them, one goal and 48 chances.
Something like it's a terrible rate. And it's like I think that you
just
expect
domestically
them to
in Champions League.
Oh, that's fair. And I mean, strictly speaking in Spain.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you expect them to be this goal hoarding team and to kind of lead all of not just Spain but all of Europe. And I think that they're tied for fourth most goals scored. And now they're playing one of the best defensive teams in Europe in their stadium. Like, man, it's a tough task. But it's also, you know, like we talked about earlier, it almost guarantees an entertaining match because both teams kind of have to go for it. They need the 3 points.
Yeah.
And so you're going to see, you know, I think a little more open of a game than you would under other circumstances.
You say that, but, I mean, they had to go for it against Carabag, and Atletico couldn't muster a win there.
I know. What has happened to Antoine Griezmann, by the way?
I think he wants to out. I mean, he's
– Well,
there
are rumors of Barcelona,
yeah,
right?
I think he's already accepted a
– But any – you know – by the way, just to go back and correct you real quick, Atletico did win on November 4th against Deportivo La Coruña.
Before that, they had, but all the same,
you know, it's
correct.
Atletico. They have correct. The right coaching, right? They have the pedigree to beat anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough to count them out. That said, Zidane has been pretty good in really all fixtures that matter, and this one seems to matter. Part of what Real Madrid's been doing, too, is they've just been rotating their squad a bunch in La Liga. Part of that's been resting. Part of that's been suspensions. Part of that's been injuries. But they've been using a lot of the younger players. And I think for this match in particular, I don't see them rotating the squad. I think they're going to go gung-ho on it. And Atletico, I think there's a Champions League week coming up right after this.
Yep.
But that said, I don't think Atletico's going to be
Europa League week.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, God.
We want people to listen to the podcast now.
Do we? in any case, I think that Atletico and Real both are in positions where I don't think they're necessarily going to try and rest up for the midweek clashes coming up in Europe. Because as much as Atletico needs to win out in Champions League, I think that this match means more to them.
It does.
And I think same with Real. I think Real's in a good enough position where
they basically need a draw in their last two games.
Yeah, they'll be fine. Even though they might go second in the group because of the Spurs results, but still, it would be surprising to see them not make it through.
It's too bad. That would be just real quick. that would be kind of the scenario that, you know, Arsenal would win its group and then Real Madrid would be number two and be like, hey, that's the fixture that you draw in the round of 16. We're denied that this year, obviously, because Arsenal's not in it. But
no, it's – yeah, it would, no, no, no. It would be Bayern because PSG will finish top of that group and then Bayern would get them. I mean, just going by history, that's how it works. Those were the main two fixtures that we wanted to talk and touch up on. If you're going to watch two matches, those are the two to watch. Before we wrap up this shortened podcast, it's not really shortened, but we just didn't want it to run that long.
Don't ramble as much as usual. Today.
Yeah, I cut everybody off and just decided to ramble myself instead. anything, any parting words you guys would like to share? Anything you'd like to say before we get on out of here? I'll start with you, Joey.
I think that this weekend's Premier League fixtures, you know, you said it's kind of interesting, like some of the matchups, the City, the United. I mean, Chelsea's on the road at West Brom. You know, Man City going to the King Power Stadium, not the easiest place in the world. So even though we're going to be very focused on those two matches we talked about, there's a chance for some interesting developments this weekend in the Premier League, and the top six could kind of shuffle up a little bit. So be watching for that.
Except for Man City.
Go on.
What about, who are we kidding? City's going to win 5-0. We know that.
What about you, Alex? Anything you want to add? Anything? Any thoughts you have?
Sure, sure. One thing on Dave Sriracha, and you mentioned he'll probably be gone.
You say Sriracha?
Sriracha sauce?
You say Sriracha, I say Sriracha.
Yeah, I think Dave might be around a little longer than that. The rumor I hear is that the U.S. soccer wants to wait until the close of the European season to see who comes on the market.
Right.
So I think we could have Dave around for a bit.
Plus, that'll obviously let the election play out, which now the U.S. soccer presidential election is just replete with big names. And I think that that's a good thing because it kind of forces – Leander wrote about this. Our own Leander Charlakens wrote about this a week or two ago. It's going to kind of force Sunil Gulati to come out and identify his positions. You know, him running unchallenged for the past, you know, what, 10, 12 years has kind of let him relax a little bit in that regard. But now people are going to challenge him directly on issues. And he may have good answers. I'm not saying he's not going to, but – it's just it's interesting, and that'll, you know, play obviously into the managerial search. And I think you're right. I think he could be around a little longer than people expect.
This is unrelated, but speaking of managers, how much longer does Simeone stay at Atletico? What do you guys think?
Until Arsenal opens up, hopefully.
I think he should have gone to Inter when he had the chance. But Spalletti generally isn't known for having a long cycle. And that's a club that Simeone played for and has been connected with. So it would make sense for him to go there at some point. And so, I mean,
how both you guys picked your clubs at his next destination.
First of all, it's not my club. I've given up all rights to all clubs, although I did used to support Inter, so completely open about that. No, I mean, that was the rumor before all this happened. He was projected to take that job, and then he agreed for 1 year. Essentially, these were the initial reports, that he agreed for one more year for the first year they move into the new stadium, and then after that he'll reassess. But I'm saying the club he was actually connected with, I don't think they're about – like, Spalletti is going to stay. Inter would love for him to stay because right now they're in a title race and they're probably going to make it to Champions League, and Italy has four spots coming up anyway. So I don't see Inter not finishing in the top four unless they completely fall apart. But Spalletti's a really good manager. He was at Roma last year as well.
Yeah.
So I just don't think that opening is going to be there for him. I'm trying to figure out what clubs he would want. In the Premier League, I'm sure there's plenty of clubs that would spend the money and have the money to go bring him in. If he wants to make that jump, he can. I mean,
that could be a vacancy at Chelsea.
Yeah, you know what? That's a very that is
a
serious possibility. He would be somebody that they would go after, and I think it would fit and work really well. Frankly, that's more likely to happen than anything else.
I'm already like firing up the bandwagon for bring Conte back to Italy, make him the Italian national team manager again.
Yeah, but why would he want that job right now?
I want him to have that job.
Why would anyone want that job? It's like the same thing with the U.S. job. I mean, the U.S. job, actually, U.S. job's still more secure because you're going to get paid out and there really is no pressure on you for a long, long time. But if you're like Italy and you take that job and you have a few bad results, even if they're friendlies, they're just going to be on you, and it's not like a safe, cushy job at all.
I'm thinking, like someone from the past who doesn't have to necessarily prove anything will take that job.
It's a caretaker role right now.
Yeah,
you don't get a real manager until you actually have the next Euros coming up.
Right.
And the qualification for the Euros is when you actually bring somebody in, and kind
What's Marcello Lippi up to these days? Fabio Capello still a manager?
Yeah, well, Capello will take that paycheck every day of the week. Ancelotti's available, and that's actually one of the names that popped up that they were like, hey, why don't we bring this guy in when they wanted to sack Ventura between the first and second leg? They're like, two-legged tie, bring in Ancelotti. It's what the man does.
It's a quick fix. He's never coached internationally, right? He's only coached on the club level.
Yeah.
Let's get it started. Ancelotti for Italy.
No, Conte for Italy.
So my little last note I want to make is I actually got to watch some of the Brazil-England match, although it ended, scoreless draw. I saw some interesting stuff for both teams and really the lineup for Brazil and kind of seeing what they like to do and what they want to do. I really thought that it was an interesting setup because you saw Neymar, Coutinho, and Gabriel Jesus playing ahead of Renato Augusto, Casemiro, and Paulinho, which was an exceptionally strong midfield, in my opinion. And those attackers, there's just so much talent there. Coutinho, got subbed off for Willian, which, again, great talent coming in for a guy coming up.
Hi, William.
Willian.
Willian. we still think you're great.
Yes.
You know who it is. Yes. And then, Fernandinho for Renato Augusto came on, and then Firmino is also a sub that came on for them. So you look at them, and, their goalkeeper is actually Alisson, not the person you would think would be in there, but he does a good job. He's an experienced goalkeeper. I really like the way that they're set up and how different they are from the last World Cup, because you look at that back line, they're not looking at Luiz or Silva at all. They still have Marcelo and Dani Alves, who, if they stay healthy, I would take either of those guys on either side. I'd take both of them, frankly. And I just like how solid that team is. And then on the other side, I kind of liked a lot of what I saw from England. I thought Marcus Rashford looked really, really good. He looked like he belonged on the same pitch as Brazil. Lingard actually looked really good. And then Dyer playing in the midfield, really stood out. So if you have a guy like Harry Kane at the point of attack, and even though they weren't necessarily, dominating possession, I just liked the way that they were able to bunker down against a top team with that type of attacking talent and actually compete and really not be overrun. So I liked a lot of what I saw. It was a 0-0, but it was a very tactical 0-0. And, it's just some of the stuff that I enjoy watching, like a lunatic.
Mm-hmm. I talked myself into England at the Euros last summer. I ain't doing it again this next summer.
No, I'm not picking them to win anything. But
Brazil, on the other hand.
Brazil's one of the favorites. Yeah, sure. Brazil, I think Brazil, Germany, and France seem to be the three main favorites.
And then maybe Spain as well. Spain. It's like, I think, but yeah, like if you said, I think we'd all agree, like we'll take Brazil, Germany, and France and give everybody else the rest of the planet. And we'd still feel confident that one of those is going to win the World Cup.
And another, just a couple players that I made notes on, I think Kyle Walker looked really good. I liked what he was doing in that match. And then Vardy just looked a little bit too isolated. I did like that they brought in Solanke. I wasn't expecting to see him, but he actually looked pretty good, and they actually had a chance. So all in all, I like what I'm seeing from a couple of the World Cup squads that I've taken a look at. Germany looks great, obviously. Spain looks really, really strong. For all the teams and all the talk about teams that won't be in the World Cup, the teams going to the World Cup look pretty darn good to me. Yeah. I'm going to be watching. Like, I'm not at all, there's no part of me that thinks, this tournament is going to be watered down because of the qualification and some teams not making it. It's like, no, the teams going are pretty darn good, and it's going to be an exciting, fun tournament. So I'm looking forward to it. And I think that is where we're going to wrap the show up.
Real quick, Fabio Capello update. He's managing Jiangsu Suning Football Club in China. So, everybody wanted that information.
Well, everybody wanted that job.
Everybody wanted that job, yeah.
Yeah, let's be honest. He's not doing it for the money. Nope. That's for the love of the game.
Absolutely.
He wants to watch it develop in China. That's why everyone goes to China, to watch the game develop.
$100 million since we started this podcast. Seriously.
Okay, I just got depressed. All right, for Joey Galino and Alex Baker, this is Shahan Ahmed. Thank you for listening to the FC Yahoo
Podcast. It's just rock and roll.
And this is where I do the... the weekly plug, while Joey just coughs all over the microphone. Weekly plug, please, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud or Audio Boom. Just search FC Yahoo. You can find us. Facebook, facebook.com/FCYahoo, all one word. You can find our page there with a bunch of writing and, you know, Leander, Henry. Henry's working. Frankly, we just don't let him sleep these days. All he does is just write and write.
He's doing all the writing.
Yeah.
Put up, Henry.
And then, you know, also follow us on Twitter at FCYahoo. You can find us there. Thanks for listening once again, and we'll talk to you hopefully next week. Bye.
Oh, God. The power has not shifted in North London, Tibet winning trophies.
It is not what you would call a tipping point.
This is all being recorded.